relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump, currently member of the Pentagon's National Security Education Board. And we are delighted. He just told me prior to us coming on air that he's had more than 60 flights already this year. But we grabbed him and we chained him down and we've got him for the whole hour. We are delighted to have with us none other than Professor James Lindsay, author of two seminal works, Cynical Theories and the latest, which is Race Marxism, and the founder of NewDiscourses.com. Professor, welcome back to America First One-on-One.
It's always a pleasure. Great to be here.
So are you excited? Are you happy now that allegedly we can travel without a mask because science?
Yeah, you know, I think that I've honestly possibly incurred a degree of brain damage from how much I've had to spend time wearing a mask on an airplane. So it'll be nice to breathe freely on planes where I spend most of my time, it seems these days, once again.
Well, you are doing the Lord's work, traveling the country, educating people not just on the sheer insanity of what we are witnessing on the new left, what my wife calls the next-gen Marxists, but also helping us understand the roots of this all, because this isn't just a sudden result of Biden or the Squad or even Obama. This goes back at least 80 or 90 years. Let's look at the latest iteration and what it has led to. This is a school teacher in America talking about what they do in the classrooms.
Hi, I'm a queer teacher and I 1000% do not support this bill. And yes, I do know what's in it. The bill in itself is just another way to stigmatize the LGBTQ+ community. Kids as young as 3 and 4 are actually aware of their gender identity, even if they don't have the language for it. So very aware of who they like and who they don't like. Heterosexuality is pushed on our kids on a daily basis at a very young age. Media, through books, the first Disney movie that you saw. To say that pre-K through third grade are not ready for such topics is actually internalized homophobia and transphobia. They're very much ready for these topics and are way more accepting than adults when it comes to discussing these topics. We can talk about gender, gender assumptions, pronouns, all the things. And it is child development appropriate and age appropriate. It's literally created as just another means to other queer people. Basically say that us existing is not normal.
That is a critique of the law in Florida that says you shouldn't be talking to young children, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, about sex in the classroom. That teacher says, no, I should. But will you unpack for us why that teacher begins by introducing themselves with the word queer? For me, one of the most important parts of your first book, Cynical Theories, is the chapter you dedicate to this concept of queer theory. I think for most lay people, this was a word that was used to connote homosexual or gay, a synonym, but it's not. And this academic theory, if we can call it such, actually has a very, very dark objective. So will you unpack the significance of that word in trying to understand the gaslighting occurring today?
Oh, yeah, that's a huge can of worms. Now, speaking as a mathematician, I have to first point out that this educator says that he, she, they, whatever, is 1,000% against the law, and that's not mathematically possible, just to frame up the educator here a little bit. But no, queer theory is an extremely important concept. I've been trying to tell people for about 2 years. We've been focusing on critical race theory. I've been trying to tell people queer theory is both their Achilles heel, but it's also the gate to hell. And I mean that pretty literally. So queer theory is this idea that being normal, normalcy, especially with regard to sex, gender, sexuality, also mental health and health status more generally, that creates a power dynamic, if you want to phrase it that way, or what it works like in kind of Marxist sense, a form of special property, a kind of cultural capital that certain people have access to and other people are excluded from. And so queer theory is better referred to as queer Marxism. And the idea is that we have to take that which is considered normal and challenge it at every possible place, obviously starting with young children. And we can unpack that part of what the person in the video said as well. But queer theory is a war on the normal. It is, in fact, you could summarize queer theory in a single sentence, which is the abolition of the idea of anything being normal. So it's trying to take the fact that most human beings are heterosexual, that most men are manly, most women are feminine, and to frame that up as a form of oppression, to turn it on its head and to make centered the idea that some people, or maybe a whole lot of people if they have their way, are not in those categories, and that those categories themselves are the problem that hurts people.
Is it fair to say that it's not just a war on normal or the concept of normal, James, but it's actually a negation? It's making normal something that doesn't exist.
That's exactly what I mean. This is exactly right. This is queer Marxism, is, or just sex, gender, sexuality Marxism is the way to put it. So to summarize Marx in a very kind of tight nutshell, Marx believed there was a special kind of capital, or a special kind of property, I should say, called capital, a bourgeois private property, he called it. And he said that certain people give themselves access to that and they exclude everybody else from that. And they create an ideology called capitalism that justifies why they get to do that, and has various features like meritocracy, that you work for what you get, et cetera. And what you see in queer theory is a complete reproduction of this, but now being within what is normal, being within what is considered to be, you know, well, not even considered to be, what just is normal and normative for human beings, that's a special kind of property that sets up a power dynamic. And there's an ideology called cis heteronormativity that teaches people. That's what the teacher was referring to. We start teaching kids heterosexuality, she said, through every Disney movie that they see, very early ages. We're teaching them to be normal, as though that's not something that's actually happening, regardless of what you teach people. And so what you have is this idea that there's an ideology teaching people that normal is good, this is what normal is, and everybody else is excluded from it. And so just like with Marx, where the idea is to negate capital, to abolish capital is actually to negate it and turn it into something else, that's the Marxist theory. Here you have negating the normal by coloring your hair blue, getting weird piercings, acting like a buffoon, putting on hot pants and twerking in front of a fire truck during a protest. These kinds of stupid activities, which they call the politic of parody, are direct assaults on the idea of normalcy itself, to negate it, to unmake it, and thus to center the people that are considered marginalized by the idea of normal or normalcy at all. It's a little complicated to understand, but when you understand how Marxism sees things and you understand what their agenda is, it becomes very clear.
It seems to me that this Marxist lens is being applied to everything, not just biology, not just history with the 1619 project, but also to mathematics. And the overarching matrix is that whatever field it is, the people in it have to be divided into oppressors and oppressed. Is that an oversimplification?
No, that's an accurate statement. The leading Marxist theory of education that we all are dealing with, and very few of us here in America know his name yet, is Paulo Freire. He was a Brazilian educator. He focused on adult literacy education, and he actually wrote a series of books that were very influential, first in Brazil and also throughout South America, but since 1985 or so have been very influential in North America as well. His works are kind of at the center of American teaching colleges now. So all of our kids go to Paulo Freire schools. And when Paulo Freire viewed being literate or being educated in exactly the same way, he said, you're educating people to participate in the existing system. Thus, they reproduce the existing system. So now what you have to do is see being educated as a elite status that people are conferring unjustly upon themselves. So you no longer should be educating, he says, people in you know, syllables or how to read or how to do mathematics. You should be, in fact, giving them political education. You should be awakening a political consciousness in them that will, it means a Marxist awareness of their role in overthrowing the system and changing history. And so everybody's it is being applied in everything, not just sex and gender and sexuality, not just race with race Marxism as critical race theory, not just economics to the degree that they still care about economics at all, but also mathematics classes now have to focus on being a political lesson that uses mathematics kind of as a costume that it wears. History is going to actually be a Marxist lesson that's using history topics to move the ball. You'll see it also, not to divert from education, but you'll see it also in churches. They're going to actually deliver a liberation theology sermon or you know, whatever, at the church homily or whatever. And as a matter of fact, you're now doing Marxism dressed up in a priest frock or at an evangelical's pulpit or whatever else. It's the same thing again and again and again.
We'll discuss the other areas it has infected. The website is newdiscourses.com. The latest book is Race Marxism. We are talking to James Lindsay. Follow him at Conceptual James. If you enjoy these one-on-one discussions with the newsmakers, with the true experts, subscribe to the podcast. Go to your favorite platform. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name. Subscribe today. It's free. Write a review and share the links and guarantee that you never, ever miss an episode. If you haven't done so already, register for our Stand with Israel tour 10 days later this year in the Holy Land with my Salem colleague Dinesh D'Souza and his lovely wife Debbie. You will walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth, places you may only have read about in the New Testament. We're going to be there at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. We're going to be there at the Garden of Gethsemane on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. Even if you've been before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. Reserve your tickets today. Call 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. That's 855-565-5519. It's not about it's not about the accretion of stuff. It's about the memories. Join us for the trip of a lifetime. Go to standwithisraeltour.com. Mike Lindell has a true passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. Therefore, he created the Giza Dream bed sheets. They look and feel incredible, which translates to an even better night's sleep for you. Mike's latest amazing deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you will receive 60% off the Giza Dream sheets that come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. You'll receive a full set for as low as $39.99. And for a limited time, with any purchase, you'll receive Mike's soft cover book free when you use promo code GORKA. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code GORKA. Along with this offer, you'll also get deep, deep discounts on all his MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-829-8468, promo code GORKA. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA.
Okay, I've asked you this before, but I have to do it again. For the record, across all of the stations, the 300 stations we broadcast to, the millions of listeners and viewers, because it really, to this day, I find it shocking, James, that you really, and I did this in my second book, you can really map the thinkers of the new left. You can map the individuals who came up with these dastardly ideas. They have names. They have schools. They have institutions that they penetrated. So let's start with the basics. Who peopled the Frankfurt School and what did they believe in? So give us some of the big names and what they thought of Western civilization.
Okay, so the Frankfurt School, for the listeners who don't know, is the Institute for Social Research that was set up at Goethe University in Frankfurt, Germany. That's why it's called the Frankfurt School. Its original name was the Institute for Marxism, but its financiers, like Felix Weil, thought that that was a little bit too on the nose, and so they changed the name to the Institute for Social Research. The kind of big players at the time would have included in the formative years before it actually came together and he went to prison, Antonio Gramsci, the Italian Marxist who basically outlined the idea of the Long March to the Institutions as it later got named, but he was only kind of tangential. The other big names would have been Gustav von Schmoller, for example, and George Lukács laying the architecture, working with Max Horkheimer, who became one of the most significant directors in the late 1920s through the 1940s. Theodore Adorno, Herbert Marcuse. These are major influential names and figures in 20th century Marxism. And their goal was to reinvent Marxism to take over the Western context rather than peasant societies like Russia and China.
Because, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but people like Gramsci and others saw the success of Marxist ideology in very backward third world nations, very agrarian, post-feudalistic ones like China in 48 and Tsarist Russia in 17. But they saw an incapacity of Marxian ideas to gain traction in well-developed first world nations with a strong Judeo-Christian basis. So their idea was there isn't going to be a class consciousness suddenly erupting in a revolution. Therefore, we have to subvert existing institutions from the outside. Is that a fair summary?
It's you've got one point off. Otherwise, you've got a perfect summary, because the subverting the institutions from the outside is not correct. It is subverting the existing institutions from the inside. Antonio Gramsci's idea was that you need to get inside of the existing institutions, which he says have a cultural hegemony, a set of norms and values that everybody kind of follows along with. And you have to get inside those and create a counter hegemony within the institutions. And so the idea was to get inside the major cultural institutions. And he named religion, family, education, media, and law, to which we would definitely need to add entertainment and medicine in the modern world. And you want to get inside those institutions and you want to change them from the inside, have a small cultural revolution in one institution after another, with a primary emphasis on education. And then when the culture is being produced by these institutions, when the entertainment industry is putting things out that people watch and consume, when the education industry is putting things out that people learn from, et cetera, then the culture itself can be shifted from within, and then the Western nations can be subjected to a Marxist revolution.
And what was their attitude to key concepts such as the truth and to the role of sex in human society?
Okay, yeah, two things, because truth is an issue that's very important to Marxists. If you actually go to Marxists.org, they have a glossary of what they mean by about every word they use. It's a very useful resource. And they have an entry for truth, and they say where most people believe that truth is something that corresponds to reality, Marxists believe that truth is a feature of a social formation. In other words, that it's contingent. It's what people in power say truth is. And so then they compare different theories of truth, but in the end they say that Marxists believe that what truth is what makes Marxism work, what puts Marxism into power. That is what must be true, because they believe they have the true scientific study of history and reality, and everybody else is just using ideology. That's a fundamental belief. So
let me just add a little footnote there. So in George Kennan's famous long telegram about the sources of Soviet conduct, he said back then in 1946, truth in the Soviet context is that which serves the party.
That's right. They say that themselves proudly. Because they believe that they have the only true theory of the universe, and therefore truth is whatever their theory says. And so how do you know if it's true is if it works to advance their agenda. That's literally the definition they give themselves for truth. It has nothing to do with what corresponds to reality. It's a social formation. It's temporary. It's whoever's in power and controls the social formation gets to determine what is and is not true. And, of course, that's a recipe for totalitarianism and disaster of the sort that, George Orwell warned about. So, their definition of truth is an extremely self-serving, we're never wrong definition. The role of sexual behavior is a bit more frightening.
We'll talk about that in a second. Dear friends, if you enjoy this show, make sure you support those that make it possible. This is an NPR. We don't get $500 million from the U.S. taxpayer. This is a free market enterprise. Great Americans like Mike Lindell, who the left want to cancel, is in the crosshairs. Support him today. Go to mypillow.com. Treat yourself. He has over 150 amazing, amazing products. Use my name and Mike will give you up to 66% off those products. The MyPillow has sold more than 51 million because it is that good. President Trump loves them. My whole team uses them, but he has everything else you could dream of for a pleasant night asleep and also just being comfortable at home. The latest is his sheepskin lined MyPillow slippers. As my colleague Mike Gallagher says, wearing them, it's like a religious experience. They want to destroy Mike. Let's show him some love. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code GORKA, or call 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468, MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA. And I want to thank all of you. Thank you so much to all of you who have so generously supported our campaign to assist those suffering in Ukraine. It is the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. This is an organization that is flying refugee aid from Israel to Ukraine. It is food for the refugees. It is medicine. It is warm clothing. And then they fly Ukrainian refugees back to Israel to safety. Please help this amazing organization. We can't go and fight for them. However, we can help the more than 40 million people trapped in Ukraine, many women and children who need your help right now. Please go to my website, sebgorka.com, and click on the Crisis in Ukraine banner at the top. A donation in any amount literally saves lives. Be a modern guardian angel. You can call if you wish and talk to the fellowship on 800-970-5010. That number again is 800-970-5010, or just go to our website, sebgorka.com, S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, and click on the Crisis in Ukraine banner at the top.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
James, talk to us. I taught counterterrorism for many years for the Defense Department. I got to understand a little bit about how the new left looks at sex when we examined the Weather Underground, a domestic terrorist organization which is associated, which is linked to Obama through its founders and leaders like Bernardine Dorn and Bill Ayers. They had a phrase, smash monogamy, meaning monogamy, a man and a woman together, is a bad thing. There should be infidelity, or there should be no even concept of fidelity. Will you explain the broader dark reality of how the next gen left, the next gen Marxists, look at sex between a man and a woman?
Yeah, for sure. And just as a kind of a pointed aside for the moment, you mentioned the Weather Underground. So, of course, this was led by Bill Ayers, another friend of Obama. But he also was a strong supporter of this woman most people have never heard of, who implemented Common Core, since we talked about education, by the name of Linda Darling Hammond. And Linda Darling Hammond was a big friend of Obama. She, like I said, implemented Common Core very significantly, but she was also heavily praised and supported by the Weather Underground and Bill Ayers in specific. So these connections are very important to recognize. As far as I bring that up, she is actually instrumental in creating and implementing what's called social emotional learning, which is how they're bringing the comprehensive sex education to the kids in schools today. And so then you have to ask yourself, well, why are they bringing this comprehensive sex education the way that they are, the sexualizing of children, the grooming of children, both politically and sometimes, unfortunately, sexually in schools? And the answer is that the Marxists have known that this is a absolute powerful. It's like a nuclear bomb against a society to sexualize the children. George Lukács, who I mentioned, the Hungarian Marxist who was the deputy commissar of education in Bela Kun's Soviet Hungarian regime briefly, he knew this, and he believed that if you sexualize children, what will happen is you will tear them apart from their family because they'll tell their parents, "You don't understand what it's like to be me." Tear them apart from their culture, tear them apart from their nation, and tear them apart from their religion. They'll say that the Bible's old-fashioned, for example, and that it's out of date and that it's oppressive itself, and they'll reject religion, family, nation, and culture. And then you can sever the new generation from the next. Herbert Marcuse, who we mentioned, who is a mid-century the chair of the Frankfurt School and probably the leading Marxist thinker of the 1950s and 60s, wrote a book in 55 called Eros and Civilization. And he argues extensively, using Freudian psychology as his argument mixed with Marxist theory, that if you liberate sexuality, then you unleash an energy for revolution, for overthrowing a society that achieves the same goals, whether it's for children or in adults. You get people to tear away from their religion, get them to question the very nation and culture that they belong to and its values. And so you can sever a generation from everything in its past by sexualizing people, especially children. And so there's a long trajectory through the 20th century of Marxists intentionally sexualizing children and pursuing sexual liberation in order to destabilize society, in order to overthrow it. You tie in the Weather Underground, and one of their favorite educators, Linda Darling Hammond, has implemented this deeply into the social emotional learning program that's in every single school in America.
So just to be clear here, because people, I think, are puzzled, don't understand why a second grade teacher wants to talk about gender, sex, and transgenderism with that 6-year-old. This is because it is a wedge. Talking about these issues, selling the idea that gender is fluid, is how you separate the child from the parents. That's what we're talking about. Correct, James?
That's right. Parents and religion and the existing national and cultural values that have made this country great so far.
Yeah. Follow this man right now at Conceptual James on Twitter, the superb website newdiscourses.com, and his seminal works, first Cynical Theories, and then the latest, hot off the press. I was there for the launch. It is a Race Marxism. Dear friends, you know me. I am a rather skeptical chap. When I was told about this thing called home title theft, I thought, really? Can a cyber hacker just take you off the title for your home and then take out loans against that faked title? Well, it turns out it's true, and it is now bigger than credit card fraud in America. You need to protect the most valuable asset you own to prevent it being stolen by somebody electronically. How do you do that? Well, first things first, you go to hometitlelock.com, you plug in your address, and you find out if you've already fallen victim. If you haven't, you need to protect that asset right now. Use my name, G-O-R-K-A, for a significant discount to put an electronic fence around the most valuable thing you will ever own. You must protect it today, because the price of losing it or having to pay the loans that you will be stuck with is something that is awful, but can be prevented. So do it today. Don't wait another second. HometitleLock.com and code G-O-R-K-A. That's HometitleLock.com and code Gorka. James, I had a former fifth-generation educator on my show recently, who's just become the president of the biggest conservative nonprofit in America, the Heritage Foundation, and the former president of a Catholic college. And I asked him, I asked Kevin Roberts, it's so exciting to see parents stand up at school board meetings, say critical race theory is racist, you're not going to sexualize my children, stop this bigotry, stop this insanity. But what about higher ed? What about the colleges? What about these endowed Ivy League institutions that have gone completely woke? I didn't rehearse the question. I asked it live on air, and he shocked me. As a former educator, he said, burn it all down, meaning start from scratch, with the exception of places like Hillsdale and other institutions like Grove City. We can't save higher education because the new left, the post-Frankfurt School next-gen Marxists, have taken full control. Do you agree with that dark assessment, or is academe, the one that you've lived in, that you've seen injustice done to truth tellers, is it at all salvageable?
We are at the moment of the test for that. I don't claim to know the answer to that question, but I lean toward burn it all down, that it is not salvageable, not without rather drastic measurements being implemented, both through state governments and also at some point in a hopeful future, a federal government that can take those kinds of steps. The way that it's going now, it is the most poisoned element of our society. I tell people, you know, you've heard of the dead body poisoning the well. Well, academia, the higher ed across the board, and the teaching colleges in particular, are in fact the dead body poisoning our society. And so, you know, you can't resuscitate a dead body if that's what it actually is. You just have to get it out of the well and start trying to do the best cleanup that you can. So I'm not hopeful for academia. I feel as though people should be kind of steering away from that and finding other options for becoming credentialed and certified to get good jobs in our society. And then we can deal with the wreckage afterwards. Those huge endowments, we should start taxing them. The DEI offices and administrative faculty, we should be firing them from, you know, state boards of regents and so on. Absolute cleaning house to see if it can be saved, but I'm not hopeful.
My, you know, my wife, Katie, we were there for the launch of your book. She shocked me recently after the drag queen children's story hour at the local community center and library. She said, "This is nuts. This is enough." And now she's running for the board of the local community center to stop the insanity. Do you think that is perhaps the most reliable way to stop this, to have average Americans engage in the war of ideas at the local level?
Well, at the war of policy more than the war of ideas. But yes, they need to get involved. I tell people, average everyday Americans who maybe they do and maybe they don't want to run for board, what I tell people that they need to do is they need to get a handful of these materials. For example, these books like Genderqueer and Lawn Boy that are ultimately pornographic and grooming books that are being not just implemented in schools and school libraries across America, but if you try to remove them, the left fights for these tooth and nail, like almost absurdly viciously, to try to keep them in these libraries. They need to get copies of these things, these materials, photographs or images of drag queen story hours and so on. Get them in physical copy and show people these things and go around so that people who are good, sensible Americans, who will exist both on the left less, but they certainly exist, and on the right, who will be appalled by this, will go run for these boards if somebody doesn't want to do it themselves. It's absolutely going to require a complete revamping of what's going on at the level of school boards, the level of county commissions, at the level of policy-making boards for these institutions. And it's going to take good people to step up who have better things to do, frankly, and decide that they don't have anything better to do than save our country.
We haven't even mentioned one topic, which is the completely wokeified corporate sector, Disney embracing transgenderism, the Coca-Colas of the world funding organizations like BLM. Are you less worried about those because the education world has that impact on the next generation, or should we be as worried about the wokeification of the for-profit sector?
I mean, I have to worry about education to a very strong degree because it's about children.
Yeah.
But the corporate problem is probably at least as big, if not bigger. The strategy is, of course, top down and bottom up. The corporations are applying the top down pressure, and the schools are creating the bottom up activists. And so both are integral pieces. The probably bigger and more influential, because of the amount of money involved, is in fact the corporate problem. And so that's where our ESG metrics that they're using now, environmental, social, and governance scores, are being used to drag people not just into weird and peculiar environmental policy and in corporate governance policy, but that S, that social, stands for social justice. If you want to know why Disney's going woke, why they're coming out and making videos bragging about wanting to groom kids and doubling down and tripling down into that, if you're wondering why Coca-Cola doesn't care that it was exposed, saying that people should be less white and they just plow ahead, it's not because of whether people can boycott or not, it's because their assets are being managed by large finance companies like BlackRock and Vanguard that are now kind of on the world stage invisible. And those people are managing them according to how much social justice, social environmental policy, and whatever their peculiar governance policy happens to be. So you have to install their officers, their DEI people, their ESG officers, et cetera. You have to do social justice and you have to adopt a green energy program, or else they won't manage your assets, or they'll cut you off, or they'll sell their large number of shares of your stock and tank your company at the investor level. These are the kinds of manipulations that are happening there. And it's a gigantic problem. That's the top-down power.
I saw you speak 20 feet away from me for the launch of your book. It's the longest I've heard you extemporaneously speak before. And I noticed something that pleased me greatly, a very dry sense of almost British humor, almost Python-esque in its appreciation of absurdity. How important is the use of humor and satire against the wokerati?
You know, I think it's actually critical. I think the one thing, this is kind of a funny thing because, you know, I study the critical theory a lot, and I think, well, what a critical theory really, when it works and when it actually does good in society, and it's not an actual critical theory, what it is it's called humor. We don't need critical race theory largely because we had black comedians who broke down most of those barriers very, very effectively through the 80s and 90s. I'm thinking of Richard Pryor. I'm thinking of Eddie Murphy back when he used to be funny, Chris Rock before he became a sellout, et cetera. Yeah. And, you know, they broke down those barriers using humor because they get people to laugh at themselves for the absurdities that they've adopted with these bad ideas and ignorance and ideologies that they've taken up. And so when you hit the woke people with humor, it allows the people who have kind of bought into it to laugh their way out of it, to realize that it's silly, to realize that it's absurd, and without feeling guilty or shameful or whatever, that it gives them an opportunity to laugh their way out of the fact that they've supported something that's patently evil. Yeah. Once you recognize it for what it is. And so it drives them crazy. They can't stand being made fun of. They take themselves completely seriously. And when you make fun of how absurd it is, they know it's a gigantic weapon against them because it gives people an off ramp who've been supporting them kind of blindly or without realizing what they're supporting. And it exposes them for being kind of the fools and frauds that they are.
All right, guys, sharpen your satirical sabers. We need to deploy them in the interest of saving the truth. Dear friends, we are coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans from their daily pain, me included. Don't suffer any longer. Find out for yourself. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G is guaranteed by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and thousands of your fellow Americans. Call 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. I want to end our discussion, which of course flew by far too quickly, with a little bit of homework for our millions of listeners and viewers across the country. So first things first, you've got to read this man's books. Start with Cynical Theories, okay? How Activist Scholarship Made Everything About Race, Gender, and Identity, and Why This Harms Everybody. Then his latest, hot off the press, is his new book, which is Race Marxism, The Truth About Critical Race Theory and Praxis. Follow this man at Conceptual James, and then the website newdiscourses.com. Beyond that, would you give our listeners a little bit of homework? So maybe not read Das Kapital, which is turgid and painful. Maybe read the Communist Manifesto. But what else? Maybe the essay on repressive tolerance. What other things should Americans read to understand how we got here?
Yeah, so I do actually encourage people very strongly to read primary sources. I would encourage people who want to understand critical race theory to read the book called Critical Race Theory: An Introduction, which was written at the high school level in 2001. It's very accessible. I would encourage them to pick up books in kind of the social justice education universe. For example, Is Everyone Really Equal by Robin DiAngelo and somebody called Aslam Sensoy. The punchline, of course, is they say that the answer is no. But I think that people should read those primary sources. As far as reading things that are a little more heavy and weighty, you recommended, for example, Repressive Tolerance by Herbert Marcuse. There's another that he wrote called An Essay on Liberation that kind of is the roadmap. We live in those two essays. We live in the world drawn out in those two essays. So if you want to understand the world we live in, you should read those. I'm trying to make it easy. If you go to New Discourses on either my YouTube channel, which is YouTube/New Discourses, if you go to my website, you can find it. Click on the audio link and you can find all my podcasts. I actually read things like Repressive Tolerance. I've read the entire essay as a podcast series. I actually read the Essay on Liberation as a podcast series. I read through it and give you commentary and break it down so you can understand what it's saying. Currently, I'm reading through the core books from Paulo Freire as podcasts. I don't read the entire chapters, but I'm going through the books and breaking down what these guys are actually saying. So go to New Discourses, check out my podcast, or pick up these essays yourself and start reading them. I can't recommend it highly enough.
He is doing the painful work for you. He's in the salt mines dedicated to the truth. Listen to his podcast, read his essays. He is the man who almost single-handedly is fighting the insanity at the theoretical level. I want to thank you on behalf of your fellow Americans. God bless you, James Lindsay. You've been listening to America First One-on-One with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
Fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Well, I think that what I'm doing is very effective, and I think that a lot of people wanted to shut me down. They wanted to intimidate me into silence. And unfortunately for them, that's just never going to happen.
God bless her. That is Libs of TikTok, or the person behind that Twitter account on the Tucker Carlson show, saying they may try to dox me and harass members of my family, but they're not going to stop me. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem News Channel. So much to share with you today. But the best of all, let's start with the most delicious. The Biden administration is intending to appeal the federal judge's court decision to lift the mask mandate. Could we be so lucky? Could this party, could this administration perhaps take the most unpopular step possible after all those videos of passengers, of stewardesses, of captains celebrating freedom, ripping off those pointless, useless cult membership icons, smothering their faces? Please, Biden, go ahead and please appeal that decision. The only thing that could make this year better is if Hillary announced. What do you think, Mr. G? Are you there? Could we get so lucky to have them appeal the mandate and to have Hillary declare as well?
Unfortunately, as our side, like Abbott likes to put on a show sometimes, I think they're putting on a show for their base. The Democrats are with the mass.
Interesting, interesting. But it's okay. It's okay because our side has the answer, don't they, Mr. G? This is from Breitbart.com, Joshua Kaplan. Adam Kinzinger would love to run against Trump in 2024. Your reaction?
So would Donald Trump.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Mr. G. So would the president. At least that's what I call him, President Trump. Adam Kinzinger, you do amuse. Other important news of the day, Netflix has lost subscribers for the first time in a decade, and I can't keep up with the figures. In my stack of readings, we have a loss of 25% of their share value as we were in our pre-production meeting there. It is up to 36%. Percent of Netflix value. Their CEO actually was on air not but a few moments ago saying, because of competition, Netflix, that has become utterly woke with Michelle Obama and Barack Obama on their board providing content for that platform, well, they have too much competition. They may lose up to 2 million subscribers. I guess that phrase, go woke, go broke, is truer than we thought. CNN Plus looks absolutely doomed. They've spent upwards of $90 million on that platform, on promoting it, and they have 150,000 subscribers. How many listeners do we have again, Mr. G? What's the latest?
Three million.
3 million, and that's not the video content. That's...
Yeah. Salem also didn't spend $300 million promoting it.
This is true. Very bad business. Oh, Elon Musk, you could buy that as well. Reports are coming in from Fox Business that Elon Musk has got another deal up his sleeve that will be revealed in the next 2 weeks. He is prepared to invest because the original deal was going to be a little bit leverage, going to get a few loans. Now he's willing to put up $15 billion. Dollars of his own. Yes, just write a check for $15 billion. Super, super exciting. And there is a buzz all across Wall Street. The investment funds, other people who aren't woke, who realize that Twitter may not have made any money for the last decade, but its potential is huge. And they may assist Elon Musk, and they may come in to help him make an even bigger offer that will negate the poison pill and that the shareholders will force the board to accept. Why? Together in toto, the board members own less than 12% of Twitter. Just that one purchase recently has brought Elon Musk to a level where he almost has parity with all the members of the board. So stay tuned, it's going to get super exciting. Last big news item I want to mention now before we get to the rest of the show. Our guests are going to include Greg Jarrett, the legal mind at Fox, Jennifer Horn, our West Coast warrior princess, and one-on-one, we're going to go deep dive on where all of the insanity came from, the transgenderism, the critical race theory. We're going to talk to the man who literally wrote the book. Professor James Lindsay of Cynical Theories will be with us for the whole hour one-on-one. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a single episode. Do it right now while you're listening. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Never, ever miss an episode. Last news I want to mention right now. A UK judge has finally approved the extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the United States to stand trial. I know a lot of you are going to have opinions. The Home Secretary Priti Patel of the Boris Johnson administration has to finally approve that judge's decision, but it looks like Assange will be in the US imminently and face trial for what he did, leaking national secrets on the public stage that is WikiLeaks. Your response, I'll give you mine, 833-334-6752. That's 833-33-GORKA. Sound off today. There's a story I wanted to share with you, my gosh, almost a month ago when I first heard it, but other things got in the way, other distractions, and then I met the person who it has to do with again, and it triggered in me the response to actually talk about it this time. Eric, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me? There we go.
Yes. Where do all my stories come from? There's usually two sources for my stories.
The post office, 7-Eleven, and occasionally walking the dogs.
Good for you. You remembered all three of them. Well, thank you, Eric. Yes, the post office, 7-Eleven, or walking my dogs in the morning. This is from the post office. There is a woman at the post office. Most of them are super nice. One of them's very nice. She hails from Russia. I'll just say her name is Svetlana. And Svetlana, she's just delightful. She's a professional. She smiles and she does her job well. A few weeks ago, we were chatting as I was buying some stamps, and she told me that Democrat customers in the post office have been abusive to her. They know she's Russian, and they've said things like, "Why can't you get your friend Putin to stop bombing Ukraine?" What kind of ass does that? You're in a post office. A woman is serving you. Professionally, she's an immigrant to America. And yes, her name may be Svetlana and she may be from Russia. But you think this is your opportunity to be a racist and to make comments like that? That a woman who's free, living here in America, deserves your abuse because you're a Democrat? I wanted to share that story with you just to indicate who these people really are. And then on Monday, I saw her again, and she said, "I'm so glad to see you. Today is my last day. I've had it with people here in the swamp. I'm moving to Florida." Svetlana, you know what your real name is. God bless you for putting up with the cretins, the morons, the cultists for so long. I wish you prosperity, safety in a free state in Florida. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Network. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, don't touch that dial.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.